Welcome to the People and Planet podcast, a show all about human health, planetary health, and the links between them. I'm your host, Ali Al-Hamed, an integrative nutrition health coach with a master's in environmental sustainability. I spent most of my life exploring these topics, and this podcast is my effort to collect and deliver information from experts to improve the quality of your life and that of our planet. Thank you so much for being here. This podcast is for educational purposes only and should never replace the advice of your doctor or physician. Always consult a medical professional before making any changes or adding anything new to your diet, lifestyle, or medication protocol. This conversation is with Hala Barghout, who is a Dubai-based registered clinical dietitian and who is an expert on weight loss, weight management, and sports nutrition. She has been working in this field for about 14 years. She works with health centers, beauty centers, universities, corporations, and fitness centers. She gives lectures to kids and teenagers at gyms and various private schools in the UAE. She also has been on many TV shows educating people through the media. Her training at a governmental hospital in Dubai and her experience working at clinics as well in Dubai has exposed her to many clinical and weight management cases. This made her truly emphasize the importance of food as medicine, as she has helped many clients with fertility issues, autoimmune conditions, IBS, and more. Hala is continuously working with restaurants on building, creating, and editing healthy menus, providing nutrition analysis for each item. She founded one of the best healthy food delivery companies in Dubai. It's one of my personal favorites. It's called Color My Plate, which aims to educate on healthy eating and provide healthy meals nationwide. In this episode, we'll be covering important tips for weight loss and health gain, the benefits or dangers of trends we see in the health and wellness spaces, and some of our pet peeves in those spaces too, and so much more. Hala, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. You and I have known each other for many years, and we've spoken about so many things related to health and wellness. You and I have also had a weight loss journey and a body composition journey. And we've always exchanged notes about our own personal journey and as well as our practice, being both of us health professionals. I know that you are an extremely experienced weight loss expert and a clinical dietitian. So I'm really excited to share your expertise with people today. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Alia. Very nice to see you on here. I'm very excited to talk to you about, you know, nutrition here, health and wellness, and educate people and raise awareness on what's right, what's wrong, and how I see things and how I, you know, want to change people's views on, you know, how to live a healthy lifestyle. So let's start. I'm excited.
Amazing. So let's just jump right in. So let's talk about weight loss. Weight loss is one of those topics that so many people are, you know, obsessed with. They're thinking about it. They're trying to do it successfully. A lot of the times people are yo-yo dieting, or they're, you know, kind of looking at the latest diet trend or the latest diet juice or whatever. And I just want to help people debunk some of those myths, understand how to start, and do it in a way that's not only sustainable, but that's healthy for their body. You and I know that there's a lot of diets that are not healthy for body, for hormones, for gut health. So what are some tips that you can offer people just to, you know, who are getting started for weight loss?
Okay, so some of my top tips include, first of all, following a healthy diet that is based on, that includes actually lean processed meats, a mix of fruits and vegetables, complex carbs. You know, usually people who follow an unhealthy diet just jump to going on strict diets and those fat diets just to see quick results. But they don't think that by just tweaking a few habits that they have, you know, eating habits, they're going to be able to lose weight and lose weight successfully, and it's in a very sustainable way. So basically, I would say eating a balanced diet, steering away from processed meats, trying to exercise regularly to fit in around 150 minutes of exercise per week, which is very, very simple and achievable. And I don't recommend, if they're not used to exercising on a daily basis, to go into strenuous workouts. Something just as simple as a 5 to 8 kilometer walk daily is enough. Two things that I see people don't really focus on, because usually people focus on food and exercise, but they also have to look at the sleeping aspect. 7 to 9 hours of sleep every day, is very, very important. This is something I do very strictly. And I know that if I do sleep less than 7 hours, it just disrupts my whole day the next day. So 79 hours, why? Because usually if you don't sleep enough, so lack of sleep affects your hunger hormones, and you're more likely to overeat and crave things at the end of the night if you don't sleep enough. I would also focus on the water aspect. So hydration is very important. Drinking water is extremely important, 1 to 2 liters per day, especially in hot weather conditions like the UAE. We tend to like not drink enough. So I would suggest drink water, focus on your herbal teas, add fruit to your water if you think you find it like boring. Those are like my top tips, and try to manage stress, because we live in a world where we're on the run all the time. There's a lot of work stress, family stress, etc. So try to find time for yourself, manage your stress by, you know, giving time to yourself. And I think, you know, like this whole approach will definitely make you lose weight the healthy way, and definitely 100 times better than going on any strict or fad diet, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I love that you share that, you know, it has to be like, it sounds like a very holistic approach to weight loss. And you've also said before, which I love, that it's not just about weight loss, it's actually a fat burning protocol, not just weight loss, because it depends on what you're losing. You don't want to lose muscle. And something I share with my clients is it's not just a weight loss journey, it's a health gain journey. And that's what I love about your practice, is that you really focus on the healthy aspect of like really bringing someone to health with hydration, with sleep, with stress management, and not just like, you know, restricting them of calories where the fat will come off, but not sustainably. So I really appreciate that about your practice. You mentioned stress. Let's get into that. I know that stress can increase cortisol and then can put weight on the body. Can you speak a little bit about that? What kinds of stress are we talking about? What does it look like and what does it do to the body?
We can talk about stress in many different ways. So there's the stress that you impose on your body, let's say when you over-exercise, you know, so adrenaline goes up, you know, your body tends to be in flight or fight mode. And what happens is you start, you know, you're not able to break down fat as you normally do. So you end up, you know, keeping the fat on your body, even though you're exercising too much and you're eating really healthy. Even though you're exercising enough and eating healthy, but still you're putting stress on the body. So what I do in general, I do exercise on a regular basis. I do strength train and I do some cardio, but I make sure that I listen to my body. I sleep when I should. I wake up when I should. On the days where I'm not really, on the days where I'm not really in the mood for working out, I don't. I just listen to my body and I give myself a break and I just exercise the next day, as long as I'm consistent. Then you have cortisol, which is a stress hormone that comes from just the stress, the lifestyle stress that you get usually from relationships, from family, from work, etc. You know, when you're always under this type of stress, the cortisol levels in your blood go up. And again, this is how your body gets into shock mode, and you're not able to metabolize, and your body doesn't function as it's supposed to. So you end up losing weight on a very slow rate. So this is why it's very important to emphasize that you have to manage your stress in a very smart way, and you have to be very conscious about it. You know, people don't really neglect the fact that stress is relieving stress or getting like ridding stress from your life is important. So of course, like once you starve yourself or you're on a very strict diet, your body goes under stress. So this is why you just being in a state where you're eating well, you're sleeping well, you're hydrating, you don't have these stressors from outside, will just, you know, let your body function as it's supposed to, you know, and this is how you lose weight in a very healthy way, or you keep the weight off, basically.
A type of stress I almost always surprise my clients with that you and I actually talked about once upon a time is the stress of not loving ourselves. And I remember when I shared my weight loss journey, I said one of the most important things is to like and love and accept ourselves. And some people don't realize how stressful it can be to not like ourselves or to look in the mirror and just criticize everything on our bodies or our face, walk around thinking we're not good enough, we're not worthy, or just highlighting all our insecurities. And people think that stress is like, you know, maybe not sleeping enough or having stressful arguments with a spouse or having a deadline. But I say, what about that inner critic in our minds? What about how you think about yourself? And you and I shared that once, and you said one of the most important things for your body composition and weight loss journey was that you also learned to love yourself better. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because I'd love for people to hear your story.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you something about like something I experienced this year, in fact, like just a few months ago. I've always been like a person, a very big advocate of healthy eating and healthy living, and I've always exercised and eaten well, etc. But I did go through a point where I didn't know what loving yourself was. And I failed a lot at, you know, putting other people first, whether it was family or friends or you know, a boyfriend or whatnot, you know. So after I seeked help from a therapist, I was learning how to really love myself. And I asked him, what does loving yourself mean? So once I started practicing that, you know, I'm good enough, and I stopped doubting myself, because I started to realize, and it was on a regular basis, I kept telling myself, I'm good enough, I can do this. I stopped doubting myself even at work, basically. So I run a business and I manage people. And, you know, there's always this inner critic telling me that I'm not good enough as a manager. Am I too nice? Am I too naive? Am I too strict, etc. So I was like, you don't need to go through this. Like, just be the best version of yourself. Start to love yourself. And that's when I realized that people noticed this in me, and they came up to me. It was just recently. They came up to me and they said, there's something about you. You're glowing. You look happy. What is it? And I was like, I just feel good, because I didn't tell people that. Now I'm saying it out in the open. But I used to tell people that I'm just comfortable with who I am. And when you're comfortable with who you are on the inside, you start to glow. You start to feel better. You're really not undergoing any stress. So this is when your body starts to honestly function properly. You know, so I never had, like, I don't have any stomach problems. I'm not bloated. I don't have skin rashes. I don't have gut issues. And I think all these stem from this type of stress. And it could be stress between you and yourself, not stress from external factors, as you just mentioned.
Right.
So it's very, very important, you know, like, even if you have health issues or weight issues that you're trying to fix, you know, as long as you're okay with understanding that this will change, but you need to love yourself, you need to convince yourself that you will get to a point where you're going to see weight loss or fat loss, then everything's okay, you know. Because I believe if you're not okay with yourself, and you manifest that it's not going to work out, you're never going to get to your end goal.
And you say a very important word, which is belief. Because if we don't believe that we can achieve something, it's like, then we are the only thing, the only obstacle in our own way. It's those, what we call self-limiting beliefs. And a lot of that can stem from self-love, self-acceptance, or a lack thereof, right? And when we're so unwell with ourselves, we don't like ourselves, we criticize ourselves so much, it's like a bully in the room that's not making us feel well. And people can actually feel it. I want people who are listening to really remember those moments where they felt like they were beating themselves up about it. You can feel the nervous system tighten. Your gut is like a bit like there's a pit in the stomach. All that is like affecting, you know, your digestive system, right? And how we absorb nutrients and how we assimilate nutrients and waste. But when you're relaxed in yourself, you actually probably realize you don't need to eat a lot. Your binging behavior or emotional eating behaviors also subside, which, as we both know, that's extra calories that we don't need, right? So there's a whole domino effect when we start to love ourselves and feel calmer in the nervous system from within. And I love that your practice and your journey, which is similar to mine, was this is one of the main pillars, and it's something I share with people, right? It's not just about the diet and the exercise.
Yeah, that's right.
Coming back to diet, though, you said something about restriction. And I want you just to, if you don't mind, highlight what like restricting can do to the metabolism, can do to the thyroid, how it actually is not serving anybody who's trying to lose weight, and what it does in terms of like suppressing the whole system.
Okay, so I, of course, don't believe in restrictive dieting. And I want to highlight that restrictive dieting and intermittent fasting are two separate things. Okay, I'd love to get into that next, but like, let's talk about restrictive dieting. So usually, and I can have someone in mind. Usually, when a person wants to lose weight, they want to lose it the fast way. Okay, because they've been trying a stubborn fat, trying as in like they've tried to diet for a week or two, you know, they haven't given themselves enough time to diet. So they end up, you know, leaning towards this one apple a day or one apple and a yogurt a day, which I know someone just recently tried to do and she did lose weight. But then a month later, I'm like, how's the diet going? She's like, I gained it all back. So that's one thing that's a major disadvantage of restrictive dieting or having or consuming up to 500 to 700 calories a day, which is extremely low. First of all, it'll affect your metabolism by eating too little. And if your metabolism slows down, the rate at which you burn fat on the long run will really reduce, so you will have difficulty losing weight. Two, you're restricting yourself from very important macro and micronutrients like vitamins, minerals, proteins, carbs, and fats. Three, you are also cutting down on a lot of fiber, which is extremely important for your digestive system. So you can go into constipation mode for a very long period. And that is, as we know, not healthy at all and could lead to, you know, toxicity in the body. Okay. Three, we can also talk about hormonal imbalances. For women specifically, it's really, really bad. You can have a disruption in hormonal imbalances. If you restrict yourself or fast for more than 36 hours, a woman's cycle can stop. So we don't want that because this leads to problems on the long run. Okay. I would definitely, advise people to first look at their current diet and see how they can tweak, you know, those small habits, the wrong habits that they are following. Just by portion controlling, just by having two Cokes instead of six Cokes a day, just by dropping two glasses of juice to one a day will eventually lead to weight loss. And those small changes in habits, slowly, gradually, let's say, will show the person that it really is, you know, calorie intake, which is very important, but you don't have to restrict yourself to the point where you're starving yourself and then it will lead you to having very low energy levels. You can become very lethargic and you can become really moody. So there are a lot of disadvantages to following restrictive diets. However, you can just follow a diet where the calorie intake is balanced, like I would say it makes sense. And this is what usually dietitians, health practitioners, health coaches recommend to people. You know, a person on their own, I would not be able to know or calculate how many calories they require because it's based on many factors such as age, weight, gender, and physical activity, and maybe other factors like hyperthyroidism, hypothyroidism, etc. So we have to look at also the medical aspect. But the funny thing that that I experience, because I know usually women come to me and say, I want 1,200 calories, you know, that's okay, but we cannot, you know, you cannot follow a diet that's based on 1,200 calories if you exercise more, if you weigh a lot more, if you have more muscle mass, etc. So all I would tell people is to consult a clinical dietitian or, a health coach to help you understand what exactly you require and help you with the composition and probably, you know, educate you and teach you on like, you know, the right portions of the meals and, you know, how to portion control. Because people who need to lose weight, the first thing that I realize is their biggest mistake is portion control. They could be eating too much of the good thing, you know, so their meals are healthy, but they just eat too much of it. Okay. So I wouldn't say to completely go from eating too much to restriction, but just gradually drop the calories and then see how you lose the weight with time.
And something I want people to understand, because it sounds counterintuitive, but like if you understand the science, it makes a lot of sense that when we restrict too much, like less than 1,000 calories for an adult, right? What's happening is the body is actually suppressing the thyroid. It's slowing the metabolism to conserve energy and conserve fat, because evolutionarily speaking, it doesn't know we're trying to fit into our favorite skinny jeans. It thinks that it hasn't rained. It thinks that we're in a famine. It thinks that we're starving. So it tries to conserve energy to keep us alive. But people don't understand that. And a lot of the times when this is conditioned, where you're doing it too often, where you're restricting too often, it leads to binge. It's binges, which is something I speak to my clients about. It's the famine and feast mindset. It hasn't rained, so the body's restricting. And then it's like, oh my God, let's feast because I have food and I just want to consume a bunch of food because I don't know when it's going to, you know, not rain again or rain again or whatever. So the body doesn't know that we're dieting, doesn't know we're trying to lose fat or whatever. And there are biological responses to restriction. And that's what I want people to understand. And it can actually harm the thyroid in the long run. You do speak about fasting, and I'm actually a fan of intermittent fasting, but I know it's so specific for men and women, and I really need people to understand that we can't be fasting all the time, every week, every day, and also depends on who you are and, you know, what your stress levels are like or how old you are, et cetera, et cetera. Can you please speak a little bit about that? Because I know you're a fan too.
Okay. So I've been intermittent fasting, sorry, for quite some time. I feel like it suits me so much. I know I mentioned today that I had breakfast today, basically. And one of the reasons I did was because I've been having digestive issues, and I thought that like yogurt would help. But in general, I do fast. I do follow my 16-8 fasting rule, and it helps me a lot. Alongside strength training regularly, it really helped change my body composition. And because I liked the way my body was changing, I just, you know, continued to do so, and I got used to it, and I'm very, very okay with it. But sometimes people misinterpret how it's supposed to be done, you know, correctly. And they usually leave a very small window between, you know, when they can eat and when they should be stopping. Okay, so they would normally fast 16 hours, but they would eat for 4 instead of eating for 8. And they're not able to include the amount of calories they require in this short, let's say, range. So this is when they go wrong, because when you fast, you're supposed to be consuming the right amount of calories within that range where you are allowed to eat and fasting, you know, the whole time. But people don't tend to do that. They have one meal and a snack, and that's it for the day. So again, this is called restrictive dieting. So I want to emphasize that if you do want to fast to regulate your hormones, to control your cravings, to rid disease, let's say, these are all, you know, products of a good, you know, results of actually fasting, then you're supposed to make sure that you're eating properly and consuming the right amount of calories and following the right diet in those 8 hours. Okay. Now, of course, for women, men and women, intermittent fasting differs. And for me, like, I don't fast every single day of the month for 16 hours. Basically, it is recommended that for women, they are allowed to intermittent fast, let's say, a week after their cycle, a week or more after their cycle. But it's not really recommended for them to intermittent fast a week before or the first 2 days of their cycle. Why? Because usually when right before their cycle, their estrogen levels drop. And this leads to cortisol sensitivity. And this is why we start to have mood swings and our energy levels drop, and we always feel tired. So this is why they do not recommend that women fast during that period, like the week before the menstrual cycle, okay? And there are certain foods that would actually help with overcoming PPMS symptoms and reducing cramps and, you know, let's say increasing energy levels during your cycle. Of course, this applies to women. So I would like to also elaborate on that a little bit more and talk about what foods we should be focusing on and what foods we should be avoiding. What do you think?
Yes, let's get into it. I mean, I definitely want women to understand that they can't compare themselves to men. What people forget sometimes is that from the first day we had our first period as like little girls to the last day until menopause, our bodies are preparing for a potential pregnancy every month. Whether we're married or not, we want kids or not, had our kids and don't want more, it doesn't matter. The woman's body doesn't just take care of us, doesn't just care that we are healthy and well. It cares that the potential pregnancy that shows up maybe is also healthy and well. So our bodies and our hormones and our reproductive system is, our reproductive hormones, I should say, are very different to men. And we have to make sure that the body feels safe. And safety sometimes looks like that we're eating enough and well enough and the foods are correct, our nutrition is correct. So please, let's jump into the nutrition part of it.
Okay, so I would advise women during their cycle, during their period, to focus on omega-3 foods and magnesium foods, because these help relieve cramps for sure. I would focus a lot on vitamin foods that are high in vitamin C, which help in the absorption of iron, because we tend to lose a lot of blood during our cycle. So we also have to focus on iron-rich foods. such as meats, pulses, and all of the dark and green leafy vegetables. And I don't know if many of you know, but like in order to increase iron absorption in the body, you need to consume a vitamin C food. So something as like a small glass of orange juice, let's say, with your meal would increase iron absorption. Vitamin K foods also control the amount of bleeding, I would say. So focus on these type of foods. And definitely stay away from any processed foods, high sugar foods. Maybe even caffeine can worsen symptoms like cramping. So replace that with, let's say, herbal teas or matcha. And I would also say, like, just to stay away from anything that is processed or sugary, any fried foods, etc., because these can definitely worsen your symptoms, and this is something that we really don't want, you know, to experience all the time. Right before your cycle, I would also suggest women consume like foods like dark chocolate, let's say, but dark chocolate with like really high quality chocolate with high amounts of cocoa and like low sugar content. Pulses, sardines is one of like the best foods to have prior to your cycle, and dark leafy vegetables. So focus on those whole foods, basically, and just think about it. Like, stay away from anything that's packaged, anything that is salty, because salt retains a lot of water, and you're already retaining water during your period. So I would say stay away from that. Cook your meals. Eat foods that you can actually see and understand and know what you're putting into your body.
You said a buzzword, orange juice. And I know you and I need to have a conversation about juices. I usually tell my clients or the people that follow me on Instagram to stay away from juices, but you're recommending orange juice. So let's get into it. What are your thoughts on orange juice or juice?
This was an example. I don't really recommend juice, in fact, because I know it's high in sugar. But when I say orange juice, I mean like one or two oranges squeezed into a very small cup, and this is not on a daily basis. I prefer that people actually have the whole fruit instead rather than having the juice, okay? Or, you know, you can just squeeze a lemon on your food.
Right. That's vitamin C.
You can squeeze a lemon, you know, like vitamin C, basically. You know, you make your own healthy dressing, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So what do I think about juicing, right?
Yes, let's get into that. Okay. The controversy.
Okay, so juicing generally is basically when people juice, they follow a juice diet for around 3 to 5 days. Anything more than that is just too much stress on the body, and you would be ridding yourself from, or like you would be not consuming enough micronutrients, vitamin and minerals in that sense. So you could be susceptible to like nutrition deficiencies. So and another thing is like juices contain a lot of sugar. And if you were to go on a juice diet, you're not going to be focusing on 6 to 7 green juices every single day. You're going to be including pineapple juice. You're going to be including apple juice or let's say orange juice, which are, you know, high in sugar. So high in sugar juices usually play a role in your sugar levels. So, you know, these cause spikes in your sugar levels. And when you have a spike, then you have a dip and then you start craving more and more. And this is not something that we want. So when you combine, let's say, when you have a very healthy diet and you include in your healthy diet fresh fruit, let's say 2 to 3 servings of low sugar fruits, it's 10 times better than going on a juice diet. People think that going on a juice diet is good because you're removing toxins from your body. Your body does this naturally. You don't need to consume anything to rid your body from any toxins, okay? Your kidneys and your liver work together in order to rid these toxins from your body. Drink water to get rid of bad water. Eat good food to get rid of the bad food. Eat healthy food to get rid of, to have like proper digestion so you can go to the bathroom regularly. This is called removing toxins from your body. You do not require any juices. You don't need to, you know, follow any detox, you know, cleanse or juice cleanse, etc., to feel lighter or to lose weight or to get rid of anything. You know, there's no such thing called this magic juice cleanse. So don't fixate on this juice diet. If you want to follow a juice cleanse, you can do it for up to 2 to 3 days just to give yourself a break. But I wouldn't really recommend it. Like, I don't recommend it to people. If they want to do it, I tell them, try it and see how you feel. Some people can't pass one day, you know, with drinking this juice. Others do it for 3 days. They feel better. They lose a kilo or two. And then they go back to eating properly again, which is something that I don't mind. But for me to go recommend people to go on a juice cleanse to feel better or to reset is just not something I would do.
I'm with you on the whole juicing. First, just having it in our lifestyle as like something as a snack that people like to have. They're eating whole like foods, but they're having juice with their omelet or as a snack in the middle of the day is separate from juicing for 2 to 3 days. And I'm like you, I don't recommend either. Even if they are having solid foods, I think it's just like a sugar spike for no reason, because it does take like 5 times the amount of that fruit to go into the juice, which is just a lot of fructose. And I think fruits are incredible for your health, even for, you know, blood sugar management, but it has to be, you know, consumed as a whole with the fiber and the nutrients, like you said. But juices every single day, I think like you, it's like, sometimes people do need to try it and see how they don't feel good on it. They're low on energy. They might have a binge afterwards because they're so hungry. And then it's just like it becomes out of control. But yeah, I think all these fads around juices can be a little bit dangerous, especially for women. There's another fad I want to talk to you about, and that's the keto diet. I get a lot of people coming to me already on the keto or telling me they want to go keto or telling me that it works so successfully for them, but they can't maintain. Of course, men and women are different. So what is your experience with keto?
Okay, so also, like, I'm not a fan of the keto diet either, just because it's another restrictive diet. And, you know, it's like all about the zero carb approach where you're focusing so much on high protein and high, let's say, healthy fats, and, you know, a healthy and saturated and unsaturated fats, and completely eliminated carbohydrates from your body. And you know that carbohydrates are your main source of energy if eaten in a very, in a very healthy manner. And they do contain a lot of fiber, which is very essential in everyone's daily diet. So once you strip carbohydrates off this diet and you follow it for 1 to 2 months, there's a lot of disruption in your body that happens. And you are putting stress on your body. One, you're consuming a lot of protein, which is not good for your kidneys. It's very hard for the body to metabolize that much protein in a day. Two, you're consuming a diet that's very high in fats. So, you know, so keto also, it's recommended that, like, on this diet, you can actually have fried food. You know, fried food is just so bad for you. And this is what causes heart disease and high cholesterol and triglyceride levels. The fact that you're consuming a lot of saturated and trans fats. So by the combination of all of these together, it makes your diet very imbalanced. And I believe in, you know, diets that are very balanced, unless a medical condition requires you to strip, to rid, you know, a food group from this diet. Otherwise, you should be following something very, very balanced. And you will see that your energy levels are on point, your hormones are on point, you don't have mood swings, you feel great, etc. And this is basically the best way to lose weight. When you're going on keto, you're also getting rid of all the stored glycogen in your body. So you're getting rid of all the stored carbohydrates, let's say, that are found in your muscles. And what happens is your body reverts to your muscles to use it for energy, and you end up losing muscle mass. And when you lose muscle mass, your metabolism drops and slows down. So it's like you end up, you know, storing fat faster on the long run after you're done, after you go back to eating normally again, just because your metabolism dropped, okay? And I think it's really not something sustainable. You can't be on a zero-carb diet for the rest of your life. So the only thing I would say is that think about, do not revert to these strict diets. Keto diet is the one that's trending at the moment. So consult someone who can help you with following a very healthy diet, and try your best to steer clear from these fad restrictive diets.
Yeah, I've heard that keto can be really helpful for someone, especially young people who suffer with epilepsy or they have seizures. I've also come across studies where there's men mostly who are struggling with like obesity or morbid obesity, or who have brain complications. So like you said, you know, unless there's a specific reason or disease or ailment, and you're doing it with a professional, the everyday person, although I have seen some men successfully be okay with keto, again, they've got a lot of weight to lose. But when it comes to women, this kind of like carb starvation, I find to be so unsustainable. And when I work with clients, it's like, yeah, they lose weight for that one occasion that they're looking forward to. But I would then have to look at their relationship to food and themselves. Why do you feel like you have to starve yourself to like look good in the stress? Like, let's work on that a little bit. Mm. And then it tends to come back on, you know, because the body's not happy with not having carbs, especially for women and their cycle. You speak about fat, and so I want to jump into cholesterol. What are some of the myths around cholesterol? Can you explain to people, like, what is cholesterol? Do we have to avoid eggs? Like, there are lots of myths floating around the internet around cholesterol.
Okay, so dietary cholesterol and blood cholesterol are different, okay? For some people, okay, dietary cholesterol does increase the bad and the good cholesterol. So basically, if you do consume, let's say, eggs, your bad cholesterol, called the LDL cholesterol, and the good cholesterol both increase. So people start to panic and they worry. They're like, oh my God, my cholesterol, my bad cholesterol went up. Is it because I'm eating too many eggs? Well, it's very different from person to person. It's not, doesn't apply to everybody. I could be eating eggs on a daily basis and my bad cholesterol stays the same and is low. So we can't base the fact that eggs are what cause a spike in your bad cholesterol, because eggs in general are very healthy. They contain a good amount of vitamins and nutrients and protein. I think people have to look at their diet as a whole, as opposed to just focusing on the egg itself and why, you know, the yolk is the reason for their high cholesterol, because a lot of people do consume trans fats and unsaturated fats, and this specifically is what increases cholesterol and triglyceride levels. So people tend to forget that, you know, it could be their diet as a whole that's causing that to increase, and they just focus on the egg aspect. Us at Color My Plate, we do send eggs on a regular basis, but we send up to two a day. So if you limit to, let's say, one or two eggs per day, then you're safe. And I'm speaking like whole eggs. So the egg yolk does contain very healthy nutrients. So does the egg white, because it's high in protein. So I would say, in general, try to vary your breakfasts. Have different types of breakfast every single day, and don't focus so much on the cholesterol in the egg or the egg yolk, because I really believe that it doesn't directly affect, you know, your blood cholesterol levels. So it's just like, it's the same for, let's say, shellfish, or it's the same for, you know, red meats and, you know, other foods that contain cholesterol. Why the egg itself, you know? So as long as you are varying in your diet and you're not over consuming so much of these specific foods that contain cholesterol, then you don't have to worry. And sometimes the body itself just creates, you know, produces more cholesterol than it should. It doesn't come from the diet itself. So you have to really find out where this high cholesterol is coming from. It could be genetics. Genetic factors play a role as well.
I love that you say that we have to look at the diet as a whole. And yes, not have everything every day, and too much of a good thing can be too much. That's not healthy for us, like too much red meat, you know, or too many eggs. But sometimes, do you find that like sugars or other types of like unhealthy foods can contribute to cholesterol? Some people, right? Have you seen that in your yeah, clinical practice? Can you say a little bit about that?
Because sugar also leads to weight gain, and when you gain weight, you are prone to developing a lot of medical disease, like hypertension and high blood pressure, heart problems, diabetes, type 1, type 2, etc. So in general, like, there's no direct link between sugar and cholesterol or sugar and diabetes. It's the fact that once we overconsume so much of these foods, these sugary foods, these sugary drinks, these packaged foods, these fried foods, etc., you're going to end up gaining weight. And the fact that, you know, you are overweight or you're gaining weight slowly is what's going to lead to disease. And one of the factors is hypercholesterolemia. So you have to, in order to keep those things in check, you just have to make sure that you're healthy and you're eating well and, you know, enjoy it, but just limit the bad stuff, okay? But just enjoy eating a bit of everything, but just limit it. That's what I would say. I think sugar is the enemy more than fat is.
Right.
Okay, because sugar is very synthetic. It's found in a lot of industrial foods. It provides zero nutrients whatsoever. And it's just like pure sugar that causes a spike in your sugar levels. And then this is what causes disease.
And I've seen that sugar can actually contribute to high triglycerides. And people hear triglycerides, they think, let me cut out fat. And it's actually, no, it's the cookies and the donuts that you're eating that's actually contributing to that. So that's why I appreciate
alcohol and smoking as well.
Right.
These are two major factors of, you know,
right,
high triglycerides, yeah, the body.
Well, talking about trends, I wanted to ask you as a health professional, what are some trends that you see online that you'd like to debunk? Certain myths or pet peeves that you see, like, you know, in the health and wellness space? Because this area, this field is like really blowing up, and there's a lot of like myths that are coming up with that, especially like how they compare men to women, or the juicing, or the detox tea that will boost detoxification. Teas are good for you, but it's not going to, like you said, it's your body that's going to help with detoxing. So what are some things that are showing up for you in this space that just you want to debunk? Or
the most thing that bothers me, like one of my pet peeves, is the fact that there are so many misleading claims on packaged foods. So I was a victim once at university. I used to buy those marshmallows that said gluten-free on them, just the gluten-free claim, because I thought this was healthy, so I can have so much of it. Or it actually said sugar-free, but then it was high in like gelatin or like, I mean, fat replacements that made it taste good, etc. So don't be fooled by those claims that you see if you don't understand what they mean. The term gluten-free does not necessarily mean healthy. You can have a gluten-free cookie that's loaded with sugar and carbohydrates and has zero fiber in it, for example. So I don't like the fact that people grab, you know, packaged items from supermarket aisles just because they say the term, they mention the term gluten-free or fat-free or low-fat or low-sugar. I always try to explain to people, especially when I do corporate talks, that these claims can really fool you. They can be misleading. So understand what these mean before you go and grab something or purchase something from the supermarket. It just bothers me so much because automatically people think the term free means healthy. The term organic means healthy, you know, and this is not true. So that's something that bothers me. And the only thing I could do is educate people on, you know, what's right, what's not, what to go for, what's healthier, et cetera. I mean, that's one of the things.
Like you, one of my pet peeve labels is natural. It's like, what does natural even mean? You know, unless it's like certified organic or, you know, I can see the ingredients, natural doesn't mean anything. And anyone can write natural on a product and we think it's now good for us. So yeah, that's a really good one. Yeah, that is definitely something in the field that needs to change. Or that needs to, like, the marketing needs to shift.
I can see some health practitioners or some dietitians recommend diets that just because it's a certain amount of calorie, they feel that they could just suggest things like, you know, protein bars or like cereal bars that claim they have 80 calories in them only, when they don't actually, like, you know what I mean? The people still do that, you know, certified, you know, dietitians or, you know, health practitioners still actually do that. They recommend certain cereal bars or energy bars or protein bars that claim they only have a certain amount of calories in them, whereby the ingredients list is so long and massive and it contains so many unhealthy ingredients, things you cannot understand or comprehend, you know, just because, just in order to make the product taste good or, you know, be more palatable. They don't understand the importance of, you know, advising people to go for items or products that contain 3 to 4 ingredients that you could understand and that are healthy and that are natural, etc. So, this is how I jump in sometimes and I recommend certain brands or certain, you know, products that contain up to 5 ingredients, and they could be something just as simple as dates, oats, nuts, seeds, and coconut oil, for example, you know. So this is something also that I see too much of, and I hope that one day it could change.
Right, because like food is not just calories, and what you're talking about is like real whole foods that we recognize, the real stuff, a date, coconut, an apple, a seed, right? Whereas people get fixated on calories, especially if they're on a weight loss journey, and they have no idea how those fake ingredients, fake sugars, emulsifiers are actually harming their body and harming their weight loss goals, because that can, you know, disrupt hormones and disrupt their gut health and their digestion. Yes. And so calories can be important, of course, when you're talking about weight loss and understanding energy. People get so fixated on calories, and food is also information and food is nourishment, but we get fixated on calories in this space, especially when people are on a weight loss journey. And so I really appreciate you bringing that through, because people need to start reading their ingredients list to understand what they're putting in their body.
Something and of course, the shorter the list, the healthier the product is. The longer the list, the less healthy it is, of course.
Right. Something you speak about a lot is how food is medicine. So can you elaborate on that and maybe share a client story of yours that could be helpful for people to hear?
Of course. So at Color My Plate, I believe what makes us a little bit different than the other meal plan companies here in the UAE is that we focus so much on people who experience, who have medical conditions or who have intolerances to certain foods. Okay, so we try as much as we can to tackle that, and we eliminate those intolerant foods from their diets, or certain foods that aggravate the symptoms they have from the disease that they have. So we do have a diet, a plan that people follow that is for people who have IBS. So it's like the low FODMAP plan. And we've launched it, let's say, over a year ago. And people who experience IBS symptoms that are quite severe and that they cannot rid on their own, they sign up to this plan where we exclude 13 to 40 symptomatic foods. And people start to follow the plan and they start to report feeling a lot better after week two or week three, because we've eliminated foods like garlics and onions and pears and apples and things that just worsen their IBS symptoms. So this just, makes me so happy, because I'm trying to help someone feel better and educate themselves on what the right diet is for their condition. Okay, so week by week, let's say, we ask people, we follow up with them just to see how they've been feeling by following this FODMAP plan, and they report feeling great. Their gut is just more relaxed, more at ease, they're less bloated, and they're not as tired as they are. Another plan that we have is the anti-inflammatory plan, or a plan that focuses a lot on anti-inflammatory foods, and which is good, of course, for fighting disease as well. Increasing the chances of being, fertility, let's say, people who have autoimmune disease, etc. So we once had a client recently who approached me and said that she was trying to conceive for the past 10 months and she was not following a healthy diet. So her diet was very disrupted. She was ordering food at the office, etc. And, it wasn't, her diet wasn't in check. So when she signed up to the anti-inflammatory plan, a month later, she mentioned that she got pregnant and she was able to conceive, which made me very happy. So this is when I started to believe that really food is medicine. Forget the supplements, forget the pills, forget the injections. Of course, to a certain extent, they could help, but food is everything. Once you nourish your body and you eat a lot of nutrient-dense foods, your body's just really happy. It absorbs better and it just starts to function as it normally should.
I guess the idea is something that we learned in nutrition school was, if you give the body half a chance, no, sorry, what is it? Given half the chance, the body knows how to heal itself, right? And if we're not sleeping and we're eating junk food, then the body's mechanisms and functioning is not given a chance to like heal and operate optimally. It's trying to detox or deal with all the other stress that's coming through, the lack of sleep, the junk food. But when you take those negative habits, I'll say, away, you're giving your body a chance to actually repair the reproductive system, the sex hormones, to bring things into balance, right? To repair the gut. The digestive system as well. And so I love that you bring that through, because I'm like you in the sense that food is medicine, and you can heal so much with food. Yeah,
for sure. And I feel like I've been seeing recently that people are also so fixated on the whole supplement thing. They go and buy supplements in bulk and they buy this and that. No supplement can replace any diet. If you want to supplement because you lack a certain, mineral or vitamin in your body, or because, let's say, you're anemic, that's fine because you can't get all the iron from food on its own. But first and foremost, focus on a wholesome, healthy diet, and supplement with certain minerals and vitamins like magnesium if you work out so much helps, or if you're having cramps, or if you're not being able to sleep, you know, these are actually added to your diet, but you should never consider taking supplements to replace, a healthy diet.
You can't out-supplement a bad diet, right? Like, you got to take care of the foundation first. And supplements are meant to be supplemental, not replace.
Yeah,
they're supposed to supplement, support the process. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back to weight loss for a second, because I see this a lot with my clients. Do you recommend people weigh themselves every day, especially women?
No.
Right?
No, I don't.
Please say why.
I know why. Because, okay, first two things. When you consume food, you're consuming weight, right? You're eating 200, 300 grams of food in one sitting, right? So obviously, if you don't have a bathroom visit, you're just, if you want to talk math, you weigh a bit more because you've just consumed an extra amount of food. So if you're trying to weigh yourself after every meal, you're never going to get the right number. Plus, we do retain water. And when we are close to, getting our period, or when we are we feel bloated, we are retaining water. And when you step on the scale and you're 1 or 2 kilos heavier, you automatically think that, I've gained weight, this is fat, I'm going to starve myself tomorrow. So I definitely do not recommend the scale as a whole. It should be just there for you to get on maybe once or twice a year even. The way I prefer to, measure healthy fat loss is by either using calipers to see what the fat percentage is in comparison to the muscle mass, or use proper machines, like very high-tech machines, to check your body composition. The weight is not a good factor of whether you are healthy or not. Neither is the BMI, which is the equation of your weight over your height squared. The BMI is not a good indicator of whether you are healthy or not, or you're slim or not, or you're lean or not. You have to look at the inside more than the outside. You have to look at your composition a lot more than what you actually weigh. Because as an example, you can be 59 kilos and have a very high fat percentage, but you can also be 62 kilos and be a lot leaner and have a lot more muscle. This is when actually weight on a scale does not matter. Okay, it could be if let's say I go on holiday and I've eaten so much and I'm used to being a certain number. Let's say I'm used to being 60 and I come back from my holidays and I'm 60. I feel like I'm heavier and I just want to find out what my weight is. I'll get on the scale to see if I've gained 2 or 3 kilos, and I'll work in a very healthy way towards getting back to my 60. But I wouldn't be weighing myself every single day. Okay, because there are hormone factors taken into consideration. There's water levels taken into consideration. There's disease taken into consideration. There's food as well. Like, that's why they say weigh yourself after you've gone to the bathroom in the morning, because you've gotten rid of, a good amount from your system. But don't do it every day. I would suggest maybe like once a month if you would just want to, keep check.
Right. And also muscle, right? Like, muscle weighs more than fat. So if you're strength training and going to the gym, like, your body composition is going to change, but the number on the scale might shift not the way you want it to. Yeah. I love that you say that the scale is also not an indicator of health. There are a lot of like lean people, or, skinny people, or people that look good, but actually on the inside, there's something called skinny fat. Their metabolism is messed up. Their guts are not good. They're constipated. There's this trend on Instagram called, I don't know what it's called. I think it's a Gen Z thing, like hot girls have IBS or something. And it's like this trend of like all hot girls or all thin girls have like stomach problems. And I think that's so problematic. First, that we think thin is healthy when it's not always, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, like, just because you're thin or you weigh less on a scale, or you were heavy and weigh less, the scale is telling you, doesn't mean you got there in a healthy way. Even if you are someone that needs to lose some fat because that will be healthy for you, you could have done it through restrictive dieting, or some people do it with really problematic addictions or prescriptions or drugs and all kinds of things. So just because you look thinner doesn't necessarily mean that you're healthier, right?
You're unhealthy. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So we always have to look at your insides, make sure that you could be having like a Big Mac meal every single day and you can still lose weight, but on the inside you're so unhealthy. So you have to look at what you eat, you have to look at your composition, And I would always recommend to make sure that your muscle mass is in the good range, because the more muscle mass you have, the healthier you are, the stronger your bones are, and the faster your metabolism. So the harder it is for you to gain weight and the easier it is for you to lose weight.
Right. That's actually a perfect segue into my last question. Could you please speak about strength training and cardio? Especially women are scared about strength training. They think they're going to bulk up. I was one of those women. It's now one of the only things that I do, as well as like lots of walking and outdoor sports or whatever. But, and I do enjoy cardio. I just don't do it like 2 hours a day the way I used to. You know, I used to do crazy amounts of cardio. So can you please talk a little bit about that and how that impacts us metabolically and hormonally and for weight loss as well?
Of course. So now a lot of, it's good you mentioned this. A lot of women who I actually advise to incorporate strength training in their diet, because most of them do cardio and think cardio is the way to go, ask me like, you don't think I would bulk up? And my answer to them is no, for the simple reason, the physiology of a man is very different than the physiology of a woman. A man has more muscle because he naturally has more testosterone. And the more testosterone you have, the more muscle mass you have. And we don't have that high amount of testosterone in our body. So there's no way we will ever bulk up or look like men if we don't actually take testosterone or like inject ourselves with testosterone. So the reason why I strength train is in order to keep my muscle mass in check and to make sure that I maintain my muscle mass, because this is what keeps a person lean. This is what makes a person a lot more leaner than if you did not do strength training. Okay, so, and if you don't consume a lot of protein and include a higher percentage of protein in your diet, you're not going to also become so bulky. So how have I not, become bulky? I just make sure that I consume the right amount of protein in my diet. I make sure I hit my 20-30% per day. And I just feel lean. I look lean. And this is one of the ways I've tried to keep the fat at bay, by just making sure that I incorporate strength training with cardio, because cardio is definitely very good for heart health, but it's not enough if you want to lose fat. So when a woman or a man come up to me and say, I only do cardio and I'm not losing weight, I usually emphasize the importance of strength training. And I tell them that by doing any form of resistance training or carrying weights as low as 1 to 2 kilos will eventually gradually help you, increase muscle mass in your body. And you're going to realize that you're going to be able to eat a bit more and not feel like you're gaining weight. It's just because you have a higher muscle mass, which allows you to have a higher metabolism.
Right.
And it's not magic. It's just, something I that every single person should incorporate in their daily, in their exercise routine.
And it doesn't need to be too much, right? It's not like we need to be doing an insane amount of, lifting and deadlifts and squats every single day. It's like 2 to 3 times a week, especially for someone just starting out, 2 could be enough. Some cardio, but not like only cardio. But a lot of people mix it together and they do HIIT. And I know HIIT increases cortisol, and especially women, that week before the cycle where they're super sensitive. Like, what are your comments on HIIT and weight loss?
Look, HIIT is functional training. It's a combination of cardio and strength. And I think it's good if you want to burn calories, right? But it's not, I don't recommend it like 3 to 4 times a week. I would say maybe once a week in combination with pretty simple cardio and strength training is perfect. Sometimes I feel like I need to do a HIIT session if I haven't been so good with my food, because it burns a lot of calories. And of course, if you burn a lot of calories, in turn, like you're able to, keep the weight gain at bay. But if you can burn up to like, let's say 700, 800 calories in a HIIT class, why not? But if you overdo it, as you said, it causes cortisol on the body, especially the week before your period where your body is very vulnerable to stress. I do, recommend that you stay away from HIIT. But as you said, strength training does not have to be lifting heavy weights. Strength or resistance training can be something as simple as a pull-up or a push-up, or something that you're resisting on the wall, like a handstand. These are forms of resistance training, strength training, So it doesn't have to be like deadlifting heavy weights or using a barbell or anything of that sort.
And actually, all these things are also good for your mental health and for your well-being and your mental strength and resilience and emotional strength and resilience. It's something I talk a lot about in my practice. It's like, go for
and
a walk.
Defense, like,
right?
Yeah, happy hormones, you know, all the time. You feel good, exactly. 100%.
Well, that concludes our conversation. I know you and I could probably talk a lot more, but I'm going to conclude here. Thank you so much for being with me, Hala. Is there any last thing you'd like to add, or are you happy with where we are?
I just want to tell everybody to, as you mentioned at the beginning, to love yourself. You have to be ready if you want to lose weight. You have to be mentally, emotionally ready. Of course, like it's weight loss is not just diet and exercise. It addresses physiological, emotional, mental, all these aspects, you know. So you have to be mindful of everything. You have to be ready. You have to love yourself. You have to seek help. You have to speak to therapists if you want to do this properly. You know, there's no such thing as, one pill, will get you places, or this specific diet will get you places. I just want to say that, you know, a long-term goals for something like something realistic is the only way forward. It's the only way you're able to lose weight in a very healthy way and actually know that you can keep it off.
But it's a very holistic approach. And that's why I really appreciate the way that you approach, you know, your practice and your business, because I'm like you in the sense that I know it's not just one or two things and it's not a quick fix. It's very holistic. Thank you so much for reiterating that. And thank you so much for being here. It's such a joy to speak to you always. And I hope to see you very soon.
Thanks. Thanks, Halia. Likewise.
Thank you for listening. Please share with family and friends that you feel could benefit from this episode. And make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave a rating and review to support the show. Check out the link below for more information about my guests and where to find them. And make sure you're following me on Instagram at wholesome_practice to learn more about what I do. I appreciate you being here, and I'll see you on the next one.